some percent of white people. So we know that that bill is going to have an impact on black people, the poor white people, the poor brown people, the poor. Which bill is getting fought the most? Not the infrastructure. And if you go down to each part of that bill, we've done it. Take, for instance, the expanding of the money for home health care workers. Well, 28% of those persons are black, 23 are Latino. So we're in D.C. today with people from all over the country, black, white, brown, Asian, Native, who are saying, we are not going to accept just an infrastructure plan that fixes our roads and our bridges while you leave our bodies, our education, the infrastructure of our daily lives, living wages undone. We can't do that. And we're saying, if you oppose the bill, as small as it is, then you also oppose racial equity, and you also oppose class equity. And we have to start unpacking these bills.
Reverend Barber, we have to leave it there. We thank you so much for being with us. Co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, President of Repairers of the Breach. And a fond farewell to Miriam Barnard. Such enormous gratitude for all your work over the past decade. Special thank you for helping to keep our team safe on and off-site during the pandemic. Your humor and compassion and skill was so cherished at Democracy Now! You'll be forever a part of our DNA because, after all, you are a Democracy Now! Alum. All the very best. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
One day.
This is KBOO Portland.
Hey, this is Wes Geer, formerly of Head PE, formerly of Corn, now with Human, and the founder of Rock to Recovery. I'm asking you to tune in to KBOO on Monday, November 22nd, at 11 p.m. for Eclectic Pandemic on your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. Today is November the 15th, the year 2021, and you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web. I am Cecil Prescott, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host Celeste Carey. So, if you want to give us a call, you're unable to do so this morning. The gremlins have come and have taken over the phone system. So until we either discover the magic formula, we will not be able to take your phone calls this morning. When we figure that out, we will let you know so that you can give us a call. But until that time happens, please remain patient as we begin our programming day here on KBOO. Again, today is the 15th of November, and Celeste and I have several things to talk about. We want to continue our conversation about social networking and all that means in our society. And want to also mention this week is Trans Awareness Week, culminating on the 20th with Trans Day of Remembrance. I want to acknowledge the importance of that week, of this week, and also begin to say some of the name of the at least 45 trans people who have been murdered this year, and there are 2 months left in the year. Most of those victims are people who are people of color, and all of them have been killed because of their gender identity. We'll talk about that. But I want to begin by sharing what I think is a little exciting news. Since we have been allowed to vaccinate children 5 to 11, within the last couple of weeks, 1 million children have been vaccinated. And in the midst of all the uproar we are finding in our society, school boards being invaded by adults without masks, talking about freedom and railing against vaccination requirement, I came across a post by a friend of mine, and she was sharing about her family experience, and she gave me permission to read it. So thank you, Jessica, and I'll share it with our listeners here. I'm sharing this because I thought that in all this uproar about vaccines and whether or not we should be required to have them or not, I thought this post by her as a parent spoke mightily to me, and I hope to you. She writes, "If you haven't been the parent of a young child during this pandemic, you can probably at least imagine it has been so, so hard. Naima's birthday is in March, which means that right after she turned 5 in 2020, she went back home from her birthday party and pretty much stayed there the entire time she was 5. She didn't play inside with a single other kid when she was 5. Not once did 5-year-old Naima go to the library. If she played with anyone, it was always outside with a mask on in Western Oregon, where it rains 9 months out of the year. Now, as a 6-year-old, she goes to school inside, thankfully, but wears a mask all day long and has no idea what carpet time is because they have to sit too close together. So at her death, she stays. Beginning in March 2020, Naima got used to saying the same phrase several times a week. When the coronavirus is over, Jania can come see my art area. I can go on the streetcar. I can go to the kids' area in posies. I can see my friends at church. We can go to OMSI again. She learned early on that when the coronavirus is over meant when they make a vaccine. And then it meant when kids can get a vaccine. We are so lucky Naima isn't immunocompromised, but other people are, and that should matter to everyone. Other people's survival should matter enough for all of us to take a vaccine that is safe and effective, according to the people who have dedicated their entire lives to studying infectious diseases, medicine, and scientific integrity. This was Naima's second attempt at the shot. She overcame her fear this time because after 20 months of saying when the coronavirus is over, why on earth would she pass up her privileged opportunity as an American to do her part in making those words a reality? We are so proud of her courage and the hope she held onto this whole time. This is a very special day. And there's a picture of Naima with her father holding up her vaccine card. Thank you, Jessica, for posting that and making this more than a philosophical or political debate, but showing us that real people, children and families, and all of us are impacted by the world we are living in, and that if we follow the example of now 6-year-old Naima, we might learn what it means to live with hope and with courage.
Thank you for that article there, Cecil. It's moving. And you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. It's 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge. It is 104.3 in Philomath, Oregon, along the Willamette River Valley. If you are in the metro area, it's 90.7. And everywhere else, KBOO.FM. More talk radio on effect, in effect, in your ears. We had kind of had dueling topics today, and since you have already eloquently kind of set out some space, what was it that you wanted to talk about?
Well, among those is social media.
Oh, as you had so eloquently and accurately called it the metaverse.
The metaverse, well, yeah. That's because a social media person who owns, you know, part of the social media world has self-proclaimed themselves as the metaverse.
Mm-hmm.
No longer Facebook, it's the metaverse.
Yeah, okay. And what about the metaverse?
Well, you know, I think we all, as we have had the opportunity to talk and share this in these recent weeks, about how we are all trying to resist being sucked further in, and I don't want to mix my movie metaphors. Thank you. But you know, I came across, you know, another article about how difficult it is to separate yourself from Facebook. And in this article, the woman talks about the not only philosophical struggle she has with deleting her Facebook account, but also reminds us that it has been a way of connecting with family and friends, and therefore it has become so much a part of her world, even though she recognized the harm that it does. It has become such a part of her and our world that it takes not only incredible strength and determination, but I think in part a commitment to alter our world that has been shaped within the past 15 years.
So when she speaks of harm, is she referring to a generalized damage, or is she referring to a specific damage specific to herself or her sphere of influence and communication?
Well, I think on both. Mm-hmm. And she recognized in her article, and I can post the link in on our website, she makes this observation that, you know, as she started using social media and Facebook specifically, and a lot of times she posted about her family and things such as, you know, pictures about birthday parties and family trips. And occasionally she would post about, you know, her viewpoint on some political topic. And she noticed that one relative would only comment on her post when those posts were political, on political topics. And this family member would write, you know, feedback about how come you did this, how come you posted this, and, you know, this family member was from a differing political perspective. And she wrote to her family member, well, you know, my political posts are just some of my posts. Most of my posts are about family and family trips and picnics, and why do you only comment on the political post that you disagree with? And the family member said, well, I never see those other posts. I don't see the posts about the family picnic.
Uh-huh.
And then they began to see, and this is what we are uncovering, and, you know, the whistleblower and all reminds us about, it's not beneficial for Facebook to post all of those, and the algorithm, and you can tell us more about that, Celeste, sort of like decides what posts we will see and why some posts are more apt to be seen than other posts. And so she began talking, and in this article she writes about that and the need to move beyond, to examine our dependence on social media, and also recognize how it is a force beyond our control.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. This is On Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. The phone number to join in the conversation is 503-231-8187. Phones are dead. That's right. I'm going to take a moment off here and see if I can't get them working. Let's see. What is our email address? Is it still moretalkradio@gmail.com?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know what? We'll have to see if we can get either our engineer Ray or one of us to log in here and get the calls. One of the things that I found really interesting, since we're stuck actually talking for the moment, is the fact that he doesn't see it. And I'm assuming that they did try to investigate to find out if he's getting anything other than her politicized and opinion posts. And, you know, you did mention the algorithm, and I did talk about it yesterday. Wow, talk about a contracted and compacted week. Wow. Last Monday. And what the algorithm has been reported to do is to try to keep people angry.
Yes, that's what she writes about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that they will click on angry post. And the reason the energy is toward the angry post is because that seems to be the thing that keeps people engaged the longest. And so he apparently, and I don't want to put the blame on him, but he apparently must look at the political posts more often. And some reason or another, the surveillance software for him has decided that that's what gets him motivated to stay on longer. Mm-hmm. And so he is seeing her politicized post. Yes. You know, and I find that, I would say that old-fashioned word that we label the villains with, I believe it's despicable. but you know, that's the business model that a lot of this social media has adopted. And unfortunately, one of the challenges is that... we're playing on somebody else's game board, on somebody else's field, and we have to recognize that. Now, we talked last week about the possibility of a more progressive platform being planned, but, you know, it's kind of hard to wean yourself off of social media if you are using it. Now, for all of you who are not using it, that's all right, good for you, I'm happy, because you found a way to not let modern life intrude on you, and not all of us have been able. I would certainly love to be able, but for many people, social media is how they keep up with their family or how they run their businesses, and not just domestically, but internationally. But anyway, yeah, how do people control the madness? I'm afraid I operate on probably not the best platform, which is essentially I'm not on it very often. I am not on it very often, but I don't see that as, you know, necessarily the best way to kind of manage the time. You do want to talk to folks. And I miss out on some of my friends because that's the only way I can reach them. Mm-hmm. Now, since we can't get phone calls in just yet, we're trying to see if we can route some of our correspondence or our communication through email. And so our engineer, Ray, is trying to tackle that. And I'm going to try to see if I can get the phones working here in a little bit. Okay. But I also, you know, wanted to introduce a topic to get people thinking. Now, on the flip side of social media is actually getting in contact with people. And, you know, we're gearing up to have one of the biggest travel times of the year. Mm-hmm. And people have been starving for travel. But because so much of our life has become politicized and, you know, angry, one of the things that's going to be an interesting experience this year is holiday travel with all this madness of hostile air passengers. And I've been following that because you're seeing people assault the flight attending crew, and you're seeing... people getting hurt by these fights, often with the flight crew because somebody doesn't want to wear a mask, or perhaps they're intoxicated and behaving badly, and a host of things. And to that end, you're finding flight attendants and flight crew taking self-defense courses. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, okay, I see a major de-evolution of the American culture, society, you know.
Yes.
We're falling apart. And I think about the logic of, you know, fighting with someone when you're a good 5-6 miles in the air, hurtling through space in a sardine can. And I for the life of me, don't see the rationale behind that at all. But you know that people are not in their right minds because, for one thing, you might be a little bit oxygen deficient. So one of the things I wonder is, are they keeping the cabins pressurized with enough oxygen? And, of course, we know people are drinking. And we know, of course, because mask mandates are people all upset and they've been politicized. So folks have some reason or another, they think, to behave badly. But I'm really curious as to how people see this whole madness and how they're adjusting to this new way of life. Because it's not just in air travel. We find that people are punching each other out in grocery stores, at restaurants, in many places of either commerce or you know, just coming together.
Well, as A.R.A.P. Brown said, violence is as America as yes. cherry pie.
All right.
And you may reach us via our email. That's moretalkradio, all together, at gmail.com. And Ray will pass on your comments to us, and that is the way we'll communicate right now. moretalkradio@gmail.com. And you are continuing to listen to More Talk Radio with Celeste, and I am Cecil. And we desire your comments and your reflections on this. And I want to read a little bit, going back and forth about your comment, Celeste, about how we are being so violent. And maybe, you know, I think we all recognize that we have been living in unusual times for the, you know, last year and a half, almost 2 years. And some of us have been able to manage it better than others in terms of how we engage our social interactions with one another. And the fact that, as you suggested, that people are so more violent and angry with one another, what do we do to get beyond that? You know, I began this morning with a post that gave me hope of a six-year-old child and how Naima was able to get her vaccine and maybe how her world might change and open up. And that is contrasted with some of the things that you said, Celeste, about how people are fighting on airplanes and in supermarkets, and they have an inability to interact with one another. Certainly we are angry and unable to communicate. So how then do we interact with one another in a healthier way? Will there ever be a time when we go back or transform the way we interact with one another? I hope there will be a time. But apparently that time has not yet come. Earlier I mentioned an article in the author is Jessica Messman, and she mentioned how social media is such a part of her life that in the title of her article is, "I Just Can't Quit Facebook. I Just Can't Quit Facebook. Yes, it's harmful to children, democracy, and much more. It also makes my life better." Are you like Jessica? I'll read a little bit from her article. She says, "I logged in to Facebook for the first time in 2008, when a teenager who babysat for my daughters sat me down and walked me through the process of setting up a profile. I was in my early 30s and had already moved across the country multiple times with my academic husband. Facebook quickly became the easiest way to share photos and information across those distances. It gave me a chance I wouldn't have had to watch my friends' and cousins' kids grow up. I didn't yet have a smartphone. I remember the babysitter showing me how to upload my very first profile photo for my digital camera. I used to print digital photos of my children and organize them in real photo albums or share them with family members via a link to a website. But soon all that seemed redundant. Facebook became my personal baby book. I now have 12 years worth of family photos in digital albums hosted by Facebook and Instagram. I also have 12 years of worth of online friendships that became cherished real-life friendships, plus acquaintances, publishing contacts, and group membership that gives me access to people across the world who share some of my most obscure interests. Try finding just one person to pass the final points of the 1970s British folk horror teleplays with when you live in rural northern Michigan or on the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. On Facebook, I connect to thousands of them. In 2014, friends and I started our own group for Catholic writers and artists, which immediately outpaced the blog we'd started. For the next few years, my entire professional life, and much of my spiritual life, was entirely bound up with Mark Zuckerberg's machine. I was invited to speak about how to build online communities, sitting on panels and giving talks like that, looking back, were free advertisement for Facebook products. This is Jessica Messman just sharing about how she was, her whole life became dependent upon Facebook.
Sure.
Cecil and Celeste, we have an email from Jeff in North Portland who signs on as your servant, and he says, I've often referred to social media as something of a social disease. It is infectious, dangerous, and becoming all too pervasive. We each run a great risk to our personal well-being of mind and emotional health. We've become dangerously atomized. Let's get away from the Borg nightmare, can we? That's from Jeff in North Portland.
You know, on one hand, yes, it is the Borg nightmare. But if you stop and think about it, here's one of the things that keeps this phenomena going strong, and that's the yearning to connect. And with just about every human activity there is, you know, you've got a good and you've got a bad. That's just the way we roll. That's how our species does it. And so I can really appreciate some of the, you know, anxiety or concern that comes out of watching social media unfold, you know, with its tentacles. It tends to bring the worst out in us. Now, before we had online bullies, we had bullies in real life. So, you know, I'll just use that one small anecdotal example of how it's not necessarily the mechanism, some of it's us. Now, what makes it the mechanism is that it plays on us. And the thought is, we human beings we have a tendency to kind of, I don't want to say outright destroy, but taint everything we touch. So
even if you just did letters, people used blackmail by post. Mm. So, you know, the question is not just how social media can be contained and how we can do better, but the question is, what is it about our nature, you know, that we are loath to try to control our baser instincts, and we don't want that kind of control. We call it censorship, you know, even though we know that the design of the tool has been to capitalize on our worst instincts.
So you, Celeste, are suggesting that, you know, a much more existential question about the nature of humanity, and
yep,
and which social media is only a reflection of, it did not create the monster. It just helped.
It's an amplifier.
I like mm-hmm. that. Yeah, and Jessica Messman, in her article, she writes, "It's true that social media, Facebook in particular, made my life as a writer and stay-at-home mom of young children so much richer and more interesting. And I was a staunch defender until 2016 when, like so many others, I started to sense that something wasn't quite right. What had once felt good was starting to feel bad." And then she writes, "One night, when yet another distant family member materialized in the comments on one of my enraged posts about Donald Trump's presidential candidacy, I angrily asked why he only ever commented on my political posts, never the posts about my writings or my children. He responded, 'But all you ever post about is politics.' He'd never even seen those other posts in his newsfeed. I think that's when I first began to consider the cost of being manipulated by an algorithm. I didn't delete Facebook, though. I just mostly stopped arguing about politics there and became a quick draw with the block button." And then she continues, "Francis Hogan, the whistleblower who recently brought thousands of Facebook internal documents to Congress and the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission, isn't the first to accuse Facebook of dividing people, weakening democracy, and hurting children in its effort to grow quickly and make what Haugen called astronomical profits. External critics have been raising these issues with Facebook executives for years, but Haugen brought receipts that prove Facebook is aware from its own internal research how harmful its practices are to individuals and society, and has chosen not to protect the well-being of others, of either. Facebook, a $1 trillion company, engages in practices that maximize profits, but results in actual violence that harms and even kills people," Haugen testified before a Senate subcommittee. "With 2.8 billion users, that's 60% of all internet users on the planet, we've already tasted the bitter fruit. We know Russian troll farms use Facebook to spread misinformation and interfere with U.S. elections. We know that the Myanmar government used the platform to launch a genocide. We know that the insurrectionists used it to orchestrate the January 6th riot at the Capitol. And now we know that Facebook knew it and did little to protect people." This is Jessica Messman talking about Facebook in her article, "I Just Can't Quit Facebook," which is in the posted October 19th in ChristianCentury.org.
Well, again, it's like any kind of media. I mean, a lot of us turned into not just couch potatoes, but, you know, bed tubers and, you know, everything else because of COVID. And we found ourselves praying to the altar of our flat screens. You know, what is TV flicks going to have on for me? What is movie time going to have for me? You know, what is that home watching office going to have for me? You know, because we couldn't go anywhere. And so how many of us had to figure out how to wean ourselves? Or how many of us had to exercise an extreme amount of restraint to keep ourselves going out and running and doing anything else we could? So, you know, circumstances have also conspired against us. But again, you know, the problem is human being. Human beings, human limitation, human unkindness to each other. I guess I'll just say man's inhumanity to man, you know,
yes.
Or person's inhumanity to each other. But I don't want to blame just the social media. It's the people who have designed the algorithms that hunt out your weaknesses and your flaws. And, you know, for all of us who want to be agents of our own destiny, it means you have to figure out how to break the cycle.
Give us your thoughts. Email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com.
And More Talk Radio is one word.
One word.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that is how do we break the cycle? Do we ever want to break the cycle? Okay, let's hear what Jeff, who wrote us earlier, he has
his follow-up message, Cecil and Celeste, was the networks are seductive. They seduce us into their grip and their web of machine learning by promising a community of sorts. Mm-hmm. However, the only way this occurs is an appeal to self. Connection requires kindness, and that's getting harder to find. And then he closes with, thank you, Cecil and Celeste.
All right. Well, you know, going to a party is a promise of community. Mm-hmm. Going to school, going to have tea or coffee with your friends, going to church, going to a sporting event, all promise community. And if, you know, you want to use the example of fights at games, you know, fans becoming fanatic, you'll see that the same kind of unsocial, antisocial behavior happens sometimes at these events. The big difference between them, and this is where I can see Jeff's point about being seductive, is again, the algorithm uses our weaknesses, our flaws, and our personality against us. Yeah. And that's what makes it evil. If it was simply a communication tool, as it used to be before they became so sophisticated and powerful with these weapons of mass destruction, we probably wouldn't have as bad of issues. There'd still be online bullying. But yeah. I maintain that, yeah, they are the evil, you know, force behind it that makes it the evil empire, but at the same time, it's because we will click on the things that aggravate us the most.
You know what occurred to me as you was just sharing in terms of how seductive it is,
mm-hmm.
is like my mind went to Peter Pan and how, you know, seductive, was it Captain Hook? Was
yeah, with the Lost Boys.
With the Lost Boys,
mm-hmm.
It, you know, it tasted good, or it seems like something good, and just gradually draw us into its fold. Hagen, Jessica Messman continues about this, and she said, "No one at Facebook is malevolent."
Hagen depends on how she defines it.
Yeah, Hagen told CBS News, but the incentives are misaligned. Facebook makes more money when you consume more content. People enjoy engaging with things that elicit an emotional reaction. And the more anger that they get exposed to, the more they interact and the more they consume. How can produce evidence that European leaders have said Facebook algorithm pushed them into extremist positions to curry social media attention, the only kind of attention that matters anymore? Facebook also knows that its products, including Instagram, harm our children. Haugen leaked an internal study that showed 13.5% of British teen girls reported an increase in suicidal thoughts after looking at Instagram. Another study found that 17% of teen girls said it made their eating disorders worse.
Okay, and so my question is, again, this is where we have to, okay, I'm just going to say it. I know this is not going to be popular, but should your kids have that much screen time? You know, do your kids need a smartphone? Yeah, they need a telephone maybe, but they don't necessarily need a smartphone. Yes, I know peer pressure is ugly in schools. What? You're wearing Ikes instead of mics?
And we have a possible phone.
Phones. Okay, phones. The phone's finally kicked in.
Oh, the ancient technology is kicking in.
Okay, so now we can give the phone number. It's 844, and so you know we don't have a lot of time, but the phone number, if you want to call in and comment, is 503-231-8187 here on More Talk Radio on your Community Connection, KBOO. And if you like this programming, don't forget to support us. We're going into our winter time when we really want to get more members to help support and carry the financial support more broadly. And you can do that by either going to kvoo.fm/give, or you can text 44321 and send the message KBOO. But let's go to our caller. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. I'm calling to say that the problem is not just Facebook and Twitter and whatever other social media you might think of. What happened to the media in general is that, newspapers, it's like they made their money off of classified ads, and the internet took those classified ads away from them, which left them with no way to make money given what they previously had. And what a number of media organizations have figured out to do instead, and big ones, I mean, like the New York Times and the Washington Post, is they've gone to a subscription model.
Yes.
And a subscription model, that means, you know, you're paying per month to read the New York Times or the Post. Because it's a subscription model, they have to please their subscribers, and they measure how they please their subscribers by which articles they click on. And which articles they click on are, you know, just like for Facebook, the ones that make them angry. So now our media has an incentive to post clickbait and to post things that make people angry and polarize them. And really, the same exact kind of algorithms that are driving what's going on at Facebook are driving what's going on at the New York Times and the Washington Post and BuzzFeed and, you know,
yes,
pick your online media organization that's adopted a subscription model. So it's a much bigger problem. You know, I'm not saying that Facebook isn't a problem. It is. But the problem goes beyond social media.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that's insightful of you. And yes,
I read an article that said this. It was insightful of the article. I'm just passing it along.
Okay. Well, thank you for acknowledging that. And yes, you know, I hate it when I see an article I want to read, and I start reading it, and I get to a point and said, okay, you need a subscription to follow it, and there's that temptation.
Well, you know, one of the challenges is that we monetize and weaponize everything, you know? So if they find out that, and it always has anger and hate sell, then it's going to become monetized. And those people who
you know, deal in that trade are going to weaponize it. They're going to make it more insidious and more hurtful and more pervasive, and there you go. But since we only have a few minutes left, let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Robbie.
Good morning. How are you all doing?
Pretty good.
All right. I'm just, you know, I'm listening to this, and this is something that I feel very alienated because for the past, well, I mean, I guess last 4 or 5 years now, watching in particular this division amongst people, you know, and this is exactly what is happening, you know, and you're recognizing the algorithms making people, you know, it's only sharing the posts that are polarizing the families. And it's just very sad because nobody, I think that this is by design. I don't think that this is just, you know, like them trying to get ads, you know, I don't think they're just trying to get money on it, although they are doing that. I personally believe that this is about spreading disinformation, and disinformation is a lot different from misinformation. But if the disinformation is intentional, misinformation would be something that's like, oh, you know, we thought this one way and then we found out that that was, you know, we were misinformed, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So those are two entirely things that I think we need to start recognizing, because what's happening is, and this is, I gotta say, like, I feel alienated because I don't agree with a lot of what is being prescribed to the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And I am obviously highly against the Republicans. And it's just so funny because I'm stuck in this middle and I'm watching both sides fight, and I'm watching both sides fight with wrong information.
Well,
and I think that this is by design.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you. When I was going to journalism school at Mizzou, and when I was going, I was a cadet in the Air Force to be an information officer. You study media and you study communication and you study propaganda, because everybody uses propaganda. So you have to learn how to recognize it and how to use it. And when I say use it, I mean both in terms of negative and positive uses. Everybody uses it. So propaganda in and of itself is not a negative thing. And so, you know, this is the world we live in. And if you are a savvy, sophisticated politician, you recognize that there are different sources of information you use to communicate with your constituents. There is the disinformation and there is the facts. That's it. And so we have to become really discerning. And that takes a lot of time these days because we are bombarded with so much information that it creates this systemic and systematic overload in our minds, and we start, you know, looking for rest. And looking for rest sometimes means turning on a TV or picking up something easy to read, which is full of disinformation, propaganda.
Well, I want to bring this up because I think what you're bringing up is, like, you know, is also by design.
Yes.
What is by design?
Yes, it is.
Exactly.
That's propaganda.
Like, so, and the fact is that people don't know where to get their facts. That's why people have turned to podcasts over the last 4 years, is because nobody trusts the mainstream media. People are trying to look for it. And here's the thing. Look at the American, I mean, our pharmaceutical companies own the airwaves. You know what I'm saying? If I were to bring up the fact that France is advising to not give, you know, healthy 30-year-olds the Moderna shot, and that's unheard of out here, I think there's some serious situations that the people on the left need to recognize, that they are promoting a pharmaceutical industry that I can't get in behind. I mean, we've talked it before, and I think me and you've said that you know very well, I mean, that this is a lab leak and they're covering it up. And
I haven't said that on another radio.
I think that it's pretty clear. It is an obvious lab leak. The more that information comes out, the more it points to this Wuhan laboratory that the NIH and EcoHealth Alliance funded. Mm-hmm. And these are the same people that are providing the vaccine and the solution now. Okay, and we're finding out through socialized medicare systems that there's 30 to 35% efficacy with the vaccine, which is why everybody needs
caller, I really appreciate you sharing your information, but one, we're almost out of time and I have another caller, and two, we're really not talking about the virus right now. We're trying to focus on communication techniques. And so I want to thank you for I got one more person who's being patient. So let's let them have a chance to talk. And thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Santiago. Good morning.
Yep. Good morning. So what I was going to say, it's pretty basically what I was going to say is that, you know, a lot of our collective power has been voluntarily surrendered in the name of anti-communism. You know, the idea that, you know, neoliberalism since at least the Reagan era has told us that we, you know, that we don't have to think as communities because we're not communities, you know, like Thatcher said, we're just groups of individuals, you know. And so I think we really need to take back our collective power through class warfare and anti-capitalism. And then as far as COVID is concerned, you know, it's been weaponized as an agent of a foreign power. And so anybody trying to mitigate the damage for some reason is seen as colluding with that agent. You know, we don't really recognize that pandemics and viruses in general are more social than medical, and how they're named and discussed, you know, determines who can catch it, who's immune, who is immune to it, regardless of the reality of the situation. And then, you know, in terms of Facebook, you know, Facebook is just another part of that neoliberal atomization. You know, people are getting angry because they're chasing, you know, they're chasing symptoms of the problem, but they're not touching the problem itself. And that really comes down to, you know, like the, you know, like, you know, the metaverse, as they're calling it now, like ideology is about constructing reality that matches, constructing a reality that matches your politics, rather than, you know, constructing politics around reality, you know, idealism versus materialism.
Well, thank you as well for your call, and for, again, you know, articulating some of the many sides of this multifaceted metaverse versus the real verse, I guess I'll say. Thank you for your call.
And this is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste, and we've been speaking this morning about how we are living in this social media driven world, and the impact it has on not only the information we receive but the information we share. And how do we, as Jessica Mesmer suggested, how difficult it is to disengage from the social media world, and how difficult it is to find sources of information and ways in which we can communicate, recognizing the supposed advantages of the interconnectedness we now have, but also the danger by its ability to decide how we connect to one another.
Well, you know, I will always encourage people to connect directly, whatever that means for you, so that you get some authentic communication that actually helps you be healthy and balanced. But also, you know, some things are kind of forced upon us. It's like in a bit, we're going to lose functionality of some cell phones, so you got to buy a newer, shinier thing. And so, you know, whatever you do with your media and your social connections, just be as discerning as you can, because you're not just talking to someone. You know, somebody is listening to you, and it may not be the person you want. And so you want to make yourself as invulnerable as possible. You know, you want to make yourself as resilient and resistant as possible to the siren of social media. Be discerning.
Be discerning.
Yes. Great.
Thank you for being a part of our program here, More Talk Radio. Please stay tuned to programming following us. Next live is the OMO Variety Hour. They'll talk about the Dems and Democratic reform, some conversation about the Democratic Party after Biden. Stay tuned.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's